call the next case.
Chamberlain versus Marshall Auto and Truck Center, Inc. Linda and Foley Montez, Amanda M. Morgan, Appellant Counsel. Robin T. Hewlett, T. Huntley Ford, the third Appellant Counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Glenn Pulley. I'm a lawyer with Gentry Locke in Roanoke and Lynchburg. Today I argue on behalf of Charles Chamberlain, who asks this court to reverse the judgment of the trial court and to enter judgment on his behalf, remanding to the trial court with instructions to award damages consistent with the statute under which this case was brought. The statute in question being 49-27 of the Virginia Code. This case involves a transaction that occurs routinely in banks around the country. A borrower wants a loan, but doesn't have the collateral to satisfy the bank. So the borrower goes to a relative or a friend or an employer or to some other person who is willing to sign a guarantee, usually on a form provided by the bank. The guarantor usually will have an account at the bank that can be drawn on if the borrower does not pay. The Virginia Code has long included a statute dictating the rights of the guarantor when the borrower's note payment is made with the guarantor's funds. I think I first saw this statute back in 1975 in a suretyship class that was taught by Professor Harry Sneed at the University of Richmond.
But
that code provision
is not meant, I assume, to displace the common law of gifts.
The statute is complementary to the common law of gift, but the statute does contain language which we submit makes it even more difficult than usual to prove a gift, because the statute specifically states that the alleged donor in this case is a creditor by operation of law.
Well, but your position basically is that this is not a guarantee that was for pay. That clearly was an accommodation, but so what? We're talking about reimbursement now.
Yeah, that's correct, Your Honor. It seems that the trial court and perhaps appellee's counsel seem to believe that it's an either-or situation. If it's either a guarantee for pay or it's a gift. And we don't see it that way. We think this case falls in between those two. It's not a gift. It was not a guarantee for pay. It was the type of guarantee which is more typical. It is a guarantee which is to accommodate a party. And there may be a variety of reasons, some of which are altruistic, but a variety of reasons which could accompany the decision to guarantee. Does not mean, however, that
there have been many an automobile purchased by a college kid whose parents guaranteed the loan. No question. It happens all the time. So the question is not whether this it was a gift or it was not for money. It's an accommodation guarantee agreement. The question is, do you get reimbursed if you get the guarantee called? That's the only question in this case, it seems to me.
That is the simple question in the case, and it is governed by the statute. We submit, Your Honor. It's governed by the statute, which contemplates a situation where a guarantee which may have been given for a variety of reasons and which may never be called on. It contemplates a guarantee which, at some point in time, is called on, and the Virginia statute says, by operation of law, that person whose money is used to pay the loan becomes a creditor of the person who is the primary borrower. Now, whether that is actually pursued or not, in Your Honor's example, I think that in some instances the parent might ask that child to pay, and in other instances maybe not.
The forbearance may very well be a gift.
It could be interpreted as such. And I think in this case, unfortunately, The trial judge seemed to feel that there was some merit to the defense argument that Mr. Chamberlain did not immediately file suit against the Marshall Auto Company to make good on his claim under the statute.
But in theory, could, putting aside the facts of your case for the purpose of the question, in theory, could a debtor receive a gift of both forbearance and credit worthiness simultaneously at the time the trial was posted? Is it theoretically possible to have a stock title that does that? If I read your brief and your argument, you're suggesting that statute precludes that possibility. I'm not sure why that would be the case.
Well, the statute, as we know, the language of the statute says that you actually, the focal point is to look at not when the guarantee is signed, not when the CD is placed with the bank. The statute says you take the snapshot at the time that the guarantor's money is actually used to pay the loan. And so, but I would have to concede, Your Honor, that if the facts were different than they are in this case, and if it was abundantly clear that at the time the guarantee was given, at the time the CD was put up with the bank, if there was a clear donative intent, a clear delivery of the collateral, etc., I suppose that the gift could be deemed effective and the statute's remedy could be rendered irrelevant.
Well, that's an important caveat because the statute can't be supposed to completely displace gift law in its entirety.
I don't think it would, and I don't think it would completely displace contract law either, Your Honor. I believe that under certain circumstances not existing in this case, there could be a contractual understanding between the guarantor and the principal obligor, which would be enforceable and which would not be disrupted by the application of this statute. But in this case, Your Honor, under the facts of this case, we believe the trial court should have given the statute its due. And it almost seemed like the statute just became, in the trial of the case, and even on the motion to reconsider, it seemed that the trial court completely avoided any attempt to determine whether that statute should have been the rule of the day.
So the error was not focusing on two discrete but separate things of intent. The creditworthiness, things of intent, which is on posting the file to the versus the, in any event, you could have it if it's drawn down anyway, which is the absolute gift of intent.
Right. Well, yes.
The failure to apply the code section would be error in and of itself. But the question is, was the code section waived? The code section applies, but it can be waived.
I think it could be, yes, Your Honor. Under a certain set of facts, I think that you could say that a particular guarantor who is charged with the knowledge of the existence of this statute and who realizes he could be a creditor, you could say that a particular guarantor may decide to sort of override the statute by either entering into a contract that would do so, as I was suggesting to Justice Kelsey, or by making a completed gift at the time that the guarantee was given. Of course, in this case, we also have a little complication in that the pleadings don't match up with a contention that the gift was made on the front end. The pleadings in this case took the position that the gift was made when the money was used to pay the debt. But then later on, after the judge decided that he was influenced by the relationship of the parties in 2007, and after the trial judge, decided that maybe a gift was made at that time, he actually based his ruling on that theory when that was not consistent with the pleadings. I don't think that's a huge point for us, Your Honor, but it is a factor in the case, which we briefed and which could be more important to the court than it is to me. I would just point up to the court that maybe the decision that I would like to refer to the court as maybe the one that would control here would be that case of Grace versus Virginia Trust Company, which we cite in our opening brief on page 7. Excuse me. Begins at the bottom of page 4, where this court said in that 1928 case that a gift will not be presumed merely from the relationship of the parties or the existence of motives for making the gift. The evidence here was so scant on the subject of gift.
Right, but you have a factual finding. Isn't it a factual finding that there was a gift? And therefore, unless there's no evidence in the record to support it, now I understand maybe you need dual intents as opposed to just at the front end, and that's a different argument. But we have a finding of the court, so unless there's no evidence in the record to support it, that's the finding.
Well, we have a finding by the court that the evidence consisted of the relationship of the parties, which the case that I just cited said is not sufficient grounds to find, and a motive which the court said was confined to I wanted to help her out. So I would submit that, yes, it was a factual determination made by a trial judge who found that there was clear and convincing evidence to prove a gift based on a relationship of the parties and a motive for this man Chamberlain to help this person out. And I would submit that is a factual finding that lacks support. If it was a jury trial, it would be a case that would never get to the jury, and it was a finding by a trial court which was not based on sufficient facts. If that answers the question. I thank you. I see that I've got 3 minutes left. I'll save that for rebuttal if there are no other questions.
All right.
May it please the court. My name is Robin Hewlett, and I represent the appellee, Marshall Auto and Truck Center, Inc., and who's asking that this court affirm the judgment of the trial court. The court found donative intent for Mr. Chamberlain in this case by several facts. Number one, the close personal intimate relationship of the two of them between Mr. Chamberlain and the owner and president of Marshall. Also, there was no consideration whatsoever between Chamberlain and Marshall. In addition, Mr. Chamberlain not only signed the guarantee, he went on to put up a CD to guarantee or as collateral for that guarantee and took out $1 million life insurance policy naming Middleburg Bank as the beneficiary. Your Honor, on page 74, line 7 of the joint appendix.
Hey, are the actions with the CD and the life insurance policy what takes this out of the garden variety situation where someone signs for a friend or a child, and so there's a mode of it's gratuitous. I mean, there's no consideration given in that scenario.
Well, I think this certainly enhances the gratuity in this particular case. Not only are you signing on a car loan, as the Chief Justice brought out, but you are putting up collateral, and you sign and you're purchasing a life insurance policy. So I think it's an enhancement.
Aren't there really two gifts going on here? I mean, the first gift is the gift of creditworthiness. I'm going to sign, I'm going to put myself in the guarantor, I'm going to post collateral. So I'm giving you something you don't have, which is creditworthiness. The other thing, though, that's very different from that, as the Chief asked early on, is you're waiving a statutory right of recourse. The evidence is absolutely clear from everything you said in this case that the first aspect of that first gift is wholly gratuitous. But what is it in this record that suggests that the trial court appreciated the distinction, or for that matter, if here she did, there's enough evidence to support that there was a gift of the labor of the statutory right of recourse?
Well, I'm not sure the trial court got to that point, but certainly by implication and by the action of the parties, he certainly did, because if it was a complete and perfect gift, and I think it sort of has three phases to it, there's the signing of the guarantee, there's the pledging of collateral, Mr. Chamberlain never died, so we don't have to worry about the life insurance, and then the drawdown of his CD, and that completed the gift to her in that particular case. And
a completed gift of giving her creditworthiness, which she is unable to maintain, but it doesn't complete the loop of saying, and you can keep it. I don't intend to seek any recourse that I otherwise have a right to do under the law.
Well, I believe that's by implication. If in fact you believe it's a total gift of that, then I believe that is waived. Moreover,
you just made the observation you didn't think the judge ever got to it. Wouldn't that concede the error, because you have to get to it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The second part, Justice Kelsey's been talking about this in two parts. One is the creditworthiness issue of being an accommodation guarantor, and the second has to do with seeking contribution for the taking of his CD and utilizing the statute. Apparently your view of the case, and apparently the trial judge's view of the case, is that there was only one issue of donative intent. If we disagree, isn't that error in this case?
Well, perhaps. But I believe he found more than that. I believe he found delivery as well, because in that particular case, if you look at Exhibit 3 on page 85 of the Joint Appendix, we have Mr. Chamberlain, we see that CD has been placed with Middleburg Bank. It is theirs to do with as they wish should she default, and he has lost total control of that CD. And that is the flip side of delivery. Unlike the Rust case, where Mr. Rust had his daughter put his envelopes of notes in a lockbox, this court found that, well, Mr. Rust still had the key. He could have gone in at any time. He could have directed her to go in at any time and pull those notes out. And that's why the Rust case was reversed by this court.
Well, he lost his CD here, but he didn't lose his statutory right of recourse unless he gave it away, which he theoretically could. But as the Chief just asked you, apparently the trial court didn't get to that question, and there's no fact finding on that question.
There was no fact finding on that, and I submit to you that if a gift is irrevocable, once the guarantee was signed based on their relationship and the CD was pledged and the life insurance policy taken out, if it was in fact an irrevocable gift, then that waives his right to seek contribution from her.
But what was it a gift of? It was a gift of accommodation guarantee of creditworthiness. If there's two issues, the first is the accommodation guarantee, and the second, the indemnification or the contribution having under the statute. If there's two separate mens reas, if you will, donative intents, you completely ignore the second one when you do that. You say he made delivery of it. Yeah, for what? For the creditworthiness. Well, he gave up control of it. For what? For the creditworthiness. You're not even addressing the second part, which is the effect of the statute that makes him a creditor.
Well, if you look at the statute, and perhaps it does, but it talks about a right of action. And I submit to you that once Mr. Chamberlain made that irrevocable gift, he has no right of action. And for that reason, that's why I believe the judge was found for the...
But what was it a gift of?
It was a gift as both of you, you and Justice Kelsey, have said, of creditworthiness, but at the end of the day, it was a gift of $50,000 that was applied to her loan.
Well, see, that's where the disconnect takes place.
Pardon?
That's the disconnect. It was a gift of $50,000. He could have just given her $50,000 or given her a CD, and she could have placed it as collateral. This was a, if it's a gift at all, it was a gift of creditworthiness. It doesn't even address, it seems to me, the question of whether or not there is a donative intent to waive the status as a creditor if it's called on. That's all I'm concerned about, and every time I get your answer, I don't get beyond, it was a gift of the CD. It was a gift of the CD.
Let me ask you a question that I think might get to, I think, the issue the Chief is pointing to. You say that the $50,000 CD was an irrevocable gift, right?
Yes, sir.
If she makes all the payments she's supposed to make under the credit agreement, what happens to the $50,000?
Presumably, it's returned to Mr. Chamberlain.
Well, then it wasn't irrevocable.
It was irrevocable as if the bank, if she defaulted and the bank took the CD down, then that $50,000 was part of the irrevocable gift.
If a gift is irrevocable, then it belongs to the person you gave it to until they give it back to you. Right?
Yes, sir.
And you're saying in this instance, the money was given to Marshall Otto.
I'm saying it went to Marshall Otto's benefit.
The gift isn't the CD. It's the intangible promise to bail her out if she... Right? I mean, isn't that the gift? It's not the car. It's not the land. It's a promise that I'll bail you out if you get in trouble with the loan.
And that is the gift, and the $50,000 secures that gift, and if necessary, can be used.
Can a gift be a promise to do something in the future? Something in the future?
I don't believe it can be, but in this particular case, that's taken out because the promise from Mr. Chamberlain is to the bank. And what he did was... put up his, not only am I going to guarantee it, I'm going to get a life insurance policy and I'm going to put up this money. And he had lost control of that money.
But who had he given it to? Because that's what you're concerned about is him giving it to someone.
Well, ultimately, it redounds to the benefit of Marshall Otto. That completes his gift. It's a three-part gift. It's a multi-layered gift. But I don't think there's any question that the donative intent was there. This was not a commercial transaction between owners of a closely held business where there's cross-collateralization and agreements between the two of them, or if I have to go down to the circuit court and qualify as a fiduciary, my surety, I have to pay them a premium. I have to indemnify them if they have to pay on my bond, the same with a criminal defendant with corporate surety. That was not the case here. This was a case between two people in an intimate romantic relationship, and where he did this out of the goodness of his heart and had the donative intent to take care of you. I'm going to make sure you're creditworthy, and if something happens, and I believe he testified to this in the trial transcript, something happens, the bank can take it down. Those were his words. And I'm not sure what more he could have done to deliver that gift to her than to do everything that was required of the bank, to have a life insurance policy, and in his own words, if something goes wrong, you can't make your payment, they will be able to take this down.
Well, the thing he could have done more is just given her the money up front.
Well, he could have. That would have been another gift, but that does not contradict at all the nature of this gift.
But your client does acknowledge, right, that the CD was given as security for the loan to Marshall and the funds might be used, quote, in case Marshall cannot make payments, end quote, right?
That's correct.
That's right. Okay.
And excuse me, Justice McClanney, I think that was the given to Middleburg Bank in case Marshall didn't make the payment.
Okay.
All right. right, is there anything further?
No, thank you all very much, and I ask once again that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Pulley, you have 3 minutes left, should you choose to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. If there are no questions, I will waive my remaining.
All right, thank you very much.